I'm Jason Michael Perry, man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things. Today, we're talking about how schools are adapting to AI. Kids in K-12 right now are growing up in a completely different era, the AI age, where for many of them, these tools have existed for most or all of their school years. And it's no surprise that teachers are dealing with a brand new set of complications. They're trying to merge traditional lesson plans with a world where a kid can generate an essay in minutes, maybe seconds. To explore how schools are handling that shift, I'm talking with Dawn Shirey, the Director of Virtual Learning and Instructional Technology for Baltimore City Public Schools. But before we talk with Dawn, let's start with a few headlines that capture just how strange this moment is for teachers and students. To limit where students use AI in assignments, schools are turning to AI detectors. But how good are these things? There's a great Reddit post that blew up. A student got a zero on their assignment because an AI detector scored their essay as 39 to 100% AI generated. The student showed their Google Doc version history, which showed that there was proof of hours of writing, real edits, something that made it seem like the whole process of work, but she still got pushback that maybe this essay was actually AI generated. Ultimately, a professor accepted it as evidence and decided to score a paper. But this isn't rare. This is happening in schools and colleges and universities all over the world. A lot of teachers are now pre-screening work before they grade them using these AI detectors, which would be fine, but do these tools actually work? Someone in a separate Reddit post ran the Declaration of Independence through one of these detectors, and it came back and said that it was AI written. Of course, while these detectors are misfiring left and right, AI companies are also rolling out more and more tools targeting students and teachers. OpenAI has a whole new student suite that gives lots of different prompt suggestions on ways that you can use AI to help you as a student. For a brief period, they offered a version of ChatGPT Plus free to college students, and this ended, I believe, in May of 2025. And teachers still can get free access until 2027. Google, Microsoft, and lots of other AI companies are pushing study helpers, writing assignment tools, to tutoring features. It's everywhere. So you have this weird tension. Students are being told use AI to help them learn, but also detectors are saying you're in trouble if you use it too much. Of course, AI is not only in writing tools. It's part of our school surveillance systems now. A Bloomberg story that's in the show notes points out that some of these schools are already using AI systems to quietly monitor what kids are searching, what kids are typing, all in the name of safety, to maybe prevent them from suicide or other things and catch early patterns that otherwise may have been difficult to. A lot of parents don't even know this is happening. And so what we have here is a world where teachers and students are stuck between AI detectors, rapidly expanding AI tools, and software that's quietly watching the background. It's a lot. Now, you can find all of the links to everything I've talked about in the show notes, but let's get into this with Dawn. I'm a dad with three kids who are navigating high school and college, and like a lot of parents, I'm asking some big questions about how AI is changing their education and what it means for their future. Talking with them has made me wonder how schools are adapting to a very new world, a new moment that they have to figure out, like, how does this all work? Over the last few months, I've been exploring this question across private schools, universities, and early childhood programs. But I wanted to start here in Baltimore, where the public school system is taking a thoughtful approach to AI. This week, I'm joined by Dawn Shirey, Director of Virtual Learning and Instructional Technology for Baltimore City Public Schools, to talk about how teachers, students, and parents are embracing and sometimes questioning this new classroom world with AI. It's an interesting place. So welcome to the show, Dawn.
Thanks for having me here.
So, Dawn, I think the first thing, the best place to start is, when did it hit you that AI wasn't just some technology trend, but something that was going to be so fundamental to the way that Baltimore public schools and the school system was going to have to adapt? And how are you preparing your teachers, students, parents to handle this moment right now?
So I think it was early 2024 when we realized this is not a fad. This is not going away. It's just going to continue to expand. And so we started to really look at what we thought we needed, which was guardrails. We knew AI was here to stay and that our staff needed to learn how to use it and that our students were already using it and they were going to continue to be using it. We wanted them to be able to use it responsibly. So we at that time began to educate a course team of cross-functional staff members to really look at how we could create some kind of guidance for our district. We spent a lot of time developing, drafting guidance. And last fall, around this same time, we were going to a variety of focus groups. We went to student groups, we went to parent groups, we went to staff groups, and really got feedback on our draft guidance and made revisions and changes and then rolled it out district-wide to all staff this summer. And we've had over 5,000 staff members, close to 5,300, complete a fully asynchronous course around that guidance, around how to use AI responsibly, and then how to really begin supporting using it with their students.
Now, when we talked for a little bit before this, you mentioned that the word guidance is very intentional, that instead of a policy, that this word guidance was something that you wanted to make sure that you used to give some flexibility in the way that things happen, because this technology is changing so quickly, right?
Yes, not just that, but we have board policies around things like bullying and harassment, around things like acceptable use of technology. So there's acceptable and unacceptable use of AI anywhere, right? But particularly in education, and particularly for a student when they are completing an assignment. And so to use AI as your own is plagiarism, right? Just like it's plagiarism to copy from a written book or to copy from a classmate. So for us, plagiarism and what plagiarism means and that you shouldn't plagiarize is already in our acceptable grading policy, right? And so for us, it wasn't creating a new policy. It was having guidance that was connected to all of our current standing policies. And along with that, it was also having an acceptable use scale for students that teachers would then navigate with them. A scale that goes from a 1, no AI use, to a 5, full AI use, and has all the spaces in between and ways to cite along the way. And so the teacher then determines and shares with students based on what they're trying to gauge in terms of student understanding in that assignment and also what type of practice they want the student to have. So if I want you to practice how to brainstorm in the writing process, I may not have you use AI at the beginning of that process. But if I'm really more focused on your actual taking concepts and summarizing them, and I'm okay with you using AI or other sources to get those ideas, then it might be a level 1 usage or a level 2 usage. So it's really dependent on the assignment and the purpose of that assignment.
I think that's a very thoughtful way to think of it. The thing that I hear from universities that's this bit of a battle that's happening is that businesses are expecting college graduates or, you know, even a vocational school or vocational work, high school graduates that come out with the ability to use and understand AI. And so there's this very tight balance that you're trying to hit where you want to make sure that some of the reasons that we focus on creative writing and the writing process is to develop thoughts, to understand something and to make sure that you're getting that critical understanding, right? But there's that balance of also needing to understand how to use these tools. And that seems like a very good way to strike that line. I have to imagine that some of this is also teacher readiness. My assumption, just knowing my kids, is that in some cases, kids are learning this stuff and exploring these things no matter what. But teachers may not necessarily, some of them may be a little bit more unwilling to embrace new technology. And that's not all, you know, all teachers. I know that there are lots of different people who fit these needs. But a lot of this has to be just that enablement to get them ready and understand this moment.
Yes. So we have been doing quite a lot of development of training materials as well as training. And we do that with teachers for teachers. So the first area of training was that required training for all instructional staff, which was asynchronous and was around the guidance and the purpose of the guidance and how to use AI and how not, and really looked at things like bias, right? And review that's necessary from what you put into AI. But it didn't get into things like prompt development or creating your own chatbot or those types of things that will really help teachers to, one, lessen their workload in some ways, and also to then begin to understand it at the level that they can then teach it for students. So we started to do that. We do an EdTech Institute with a small group of teachers in the summer. We developed some content for that, and we ran that this summer. We then took that same training, tweaked it based on feedback from those teachers, and we did a professional learning community this fall, and we'll do that very similar professional learning community again in the spring. And then we're also working to develop a asynchronous course that we'll be able to roll out more broadly. So we're doing these smaller steps now to really refine it so that we can then roll out a broader course that will impact more teachers. We also did, in October, a day of AI for educators to come during one of our professional learning days, which was a statewide day. And teachers were able to come for a full day to do just that. They looked at thinking about how they could use AI for tasks that they're doing all the time to really help them be more efficient and more effective in some ways, to free up time for those pieces that they really need to use their expertise in to really help differentiate for students. And so we showed them how to use the PARTS model to develop prompts, so some prompt engineering work, if you will, and then really helping them to then look at the responses that they are getting from the AI tool, and to look at it in terms of accuracy, to look at it in terms of, did your prompt have bias? Did the response have bias? Did it not? Were you looking for bias? Those types of things. And then began to show them how to utilize and create their own gem for tasks they're doing all the time, or their own agent. And we, you know, are the chatbot.
And two things for those, just terminology, and make sure that I'm right. You're speaking of a prompt framework. Is that correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
So a prompt framework is usually structured in a way that, I guess, forces you or makes you ask all of the right elements. And by doing that, it can help reduce what's called hallucination, where an AI model makes something up. And so it sounds like, you know, part of this is teaching how do you write the right prompts. One of the other things that you mentioned, which I think is absolutely fascinating, is that my understanding is that Baltimore Public Schools is, for the most part, standardized on both Google and Microsoft platforms. And so you make a lot of use of Microsoft Copilot and a lot of use of Google Gemini, which are the AI models that kind of come native, for the most part, with those platforms. And that's what you all are using pretty regularly. But this idea of gems, I don't know if you can explain a little bit about what that is and how it works.
Yes. So we use both of those platforms, and we recommend those platforms just because of the security, given that we are both a Microsoft and a Google district. And gems and agents are ways that you can create, you're almost creating that,
like an AI assistant.
An AI assistant to some degree. So what you're doing is you're preloading that prompt in. So you're putting the very specific language of what you're looking for. So an example might be, from perspective of district person, when we're hiring new positions, we need to create performance tasks, right? And so I might say that in order to create that, I'm going to upload the job description and ask for a task that does these things based on this rubric, right? Mm-hmm. And then if I've already preloaded that information into the chatbot, then all I have to do is upload that information, and it's going to require me to upload it because I've already put that language in. So I'm preloading the specificity that I want, but I still have to prompt or give specific information for that task that I'm doing. So it works really well for tasks that you do repetitively. So if I need to email a parent about a student that may be doing really well in something, or for a student that may be struggling with a particular assignment, I could kind of preload information, and then the chatbot, because of the way I've developed it, is prompting me for things that are specific around the assignment or specific around the type of feedback I want to give. And I still have to give that specific information into the chatbot, mm-hmm. and I still need to review the output that I'm getting from the AI. But I don't have to do all the in-between stuff. It's doing it for me, which is going to save me time in the long run if it's something I do over and over again.
It makes me think of a template. It's a prompt, an instruction set that Someone has already taken the time to develop a massage in the right way to create this template. It's going to ask me for the question, so I'm giving it the unique information that I need to, but then I can just fill in those gaps. And my understanding about gyms, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that this is something that between your teachers that they can share, right? So I can create a gym that's a template for a thing that maybe we use in the math department or we use in the computer science department, and then we can share those things across each other. So part of this is it allows you to create a community and kind of work together.
Yes, that's exactly what it does. And so gyms, just as of a few weeks ago, are now shareable.
Nice.
And agents have been shareable for quite a while. So our teachers are more familiar, for the most part, with Google, so they would be using Gemini a lot more. But yes, and we're in the early stages of really the training for that. And so we've got, you know, quite a few teachers, and they're all at different spaces in terms of their understanding and how much they use AI and their AI literacy, if you will. So we're trying to develop that, and we're doing that in the fashion of, like I've stated earlier, helping them understand how to be more efficient, how to really be as specific as possible to get back what you're looking for, how to really use discernment around what you've received, and how to build things like a gem that are going to help you and your colleagues, and you can begin to create not just a prompt library across those that are in your school or in a similar subject area and grade level, but then a gem that is really this template that helps everyone to really be more efficient.
That's awesome. Another thing, like as a parent who's not a teacher in the public school system, you have to imagine that parents have a little trepidation on how do you navigate this moment, especially if your kids are learning about AI. They're using these tools that you may be unfamiliar with. Are there things that the school system's recommending to parents or education or things that you're trying to make available to them to also help them understand how to deal with this moment or how to understand the AI homework that a kid may come home with?
Yeah, so we have just begun to do some more public-facing pieces because we are focusing more so on teachers.
I understand.
And we're starting to do a little bit with students that I'll share about as well. But we do have a public-facing site on our Baltimore City Public Schools site. We do have a page around the AI guidance.
And I'll add that to our show notes so that link is available.
Great. And so it describes what AI is. It indicates our guiding principles for the guidance. It has links to the guidance in both English and Spanish. It has some focus on if you're using AI well, you really also need to think critically, right? You need to be able to look at that output and determine, is it really what I asked for? Is it really match what my purpose is, right? If it's for an assignment or if it's really just for a task that you as an adult or student are completing, does it really match what I'm looking for? And the other piece that we really focus in on is privacy and security. That is true in technology and anything, but it's even more true in the AI world, depending on which tool you're using. You shouldn't ever put personal identifiable information into something. And so that's called out on the page as well, and examples of student use that is authorized with AI and things that aren't, right? Mm-hmm. And then it links to our board policies. So all of those pieces, including our acceptable use scale for students, are linked on that page and described on that page. So it's a starting point for us. And then we're focusing more in terms of training with our instructional staff, our teachers, but also our district staff. And then we've begun to look at some pieces for students. So we have, just last week, we did some training with our computer science teachers and some of our other positions that support computer science in our schools. And they will be doing with students Hour of AI the second week in December. And so there are some resources that they're able to use from code.org to really begin to do this Hour of AI with students so they can begin to look at AI and the capacity that it has.
And this is not limited to students, right? This is something that's starting with teachers first and then moving to students after?
Yeah, so the Hour of AI is specifically for students. It's a push for us to do. In the past, we've done in December Hour of Code.
Okay.
And it's something that, you know, we really work with our computer science teachers and other teachers to support students in focusing in at least for that hour during a specific week. And we give lots of resources for it. And so in the past, we've done that. And this year, we're shifting to do the Hour of AI. And sometimes when you have a focus like that and a plethora of resources and training beforehand, which we did, it allows folks to really dig into something that they may not be a little unsure of, right? And also allows us to, so in the training last week, we asked for folks to complete a survey around when they would be doing that, when they think they might be doing the Hour of AI. And so it allows us to then provide support during that time. And so team members can support those teachers and students for that hour. So this is our first year doing it. And we're hoping that it'll grow over time. So that, and we're also planning to have some opportunities that some additional resources, such as interviews from folks in the industry around how they use AI that teachers that are pre-recorded, that teachers can then share with students as well to begin to hear what it looks like in the work world, because that's important too. It's important not just for our high school students, but our middle school students and even our elementary, just to understand what the real world usage is.
So when something like this is happening so quickly, though, it's what we see as, I always like to say that, you know, today's AI is the worst AI we'll ever use. And this technology is adapting so fast. I don't know if I can think of a technology that's moving so quickly. Right. And things that made sense 3, 6, 9 months, a year ago, you know, they're not necessarily the same. You know, ChatGPT-5, you know, is still months old, not years old. And so I'm wondering, like, how you think about that as you're educating students, teachers, parents, and bringing all these folks along, but also having to kind of ride the wave, like right at the beginning of that bleeding, you know, edge of the wave, to make sure that you're understanding and seeing this technology evolution, but adapting it to teach it very quickly at the same time.
Right. So I think for us, it really is this piece, because it is evolving so fast, that we need to be grounded in our principles of how we should use and not use, because that isn't going to change, right? Mm-hmm. What you should and should not, what you cannot claim as your own that you have not done on your own, right? And how to really think critically about what is before you, and not just what you're using when you use AI, but when you're looking at something that someone has shared with you, or even that is an output, how do you know that that's true or not, right? And so there's this space of you really thinking about your prior knowledge and what you know about things and whether that makes sense, right? The response makes sense or doesn't make sense. And so I think there is a space of questioning whether things are true or not, and then using a variety of sources, mm-hmm, when you think something might not be accurate, to really determine, right, whether that's true. And so I think we've got to teach kids that too, outside of their AI use, what's coming at them. You know, and we see this all the time. We see on different social media platforms, we'll see videos or we'll see ads for something, for like a new movie that's coming, that's the third version of such and such, that we're like, oh, wow, that's great. And it's not true, right? Yes. Someone has generated the movie poster, most likely using a multimodal model, right? Mm-hmm. And they maybe even generated the description and they posted it. And it's, you know, it's all in fun, but someone may look at it and believe it's true. And so we've got to have the space of how do we determine what is fact and what is fiction. And that's been true all along for kids, right? But now we just have that, it's not just in written language now, it's in pictures, it's in videos, like it's just a little more expansive.
I really appreciate that this, you know, that no matter how you look at this at the end, it's about teaching these fundamental and core concepts. And if you understand things like, you know, ethics and the proper way to interact regardless of the technology, that you will be able to adapt as AI evolves, and that at the end, and I think this is what you began with the policies that already exist versus the governance and guidance that you're providing, is that foundation is already there. And if you reinforce that foundation, and you also add a little bit of things like, you know, understanding how do you tell what's fake and what's real in a world that's ever changing. So I have a last question for you.
I consider myself to be a bit of a tech optimist. I love technology. I mean, I'm sure that's not surprising to anyone who listens to the podcast or follows anything that I do. But there are a lot of people who are very nervous about what the world looks like for a generation that, I mean, I think is going to be in some ways AI native. You know, just like we had a internet native and a digital native and a mobile native, you know, generation before this. And I'm wondering, like, as you're here on the front line seeing kids of all ages, K through 12, right, experiencing this new technology and this new wave, where do you find yourself? Do you find yourself feeling optimistic? Do you find yourself feeling afraid? Do you find yourself excited? You know, maybe I'm leading too much. I'm gonna back away.
I am almost always optimistic, and so I'm very optimistic and excited. I just think about, you know, things that we've never seen before and solutions we've never seen before, where AI can help our students find those solutions, right? It's a way to work a lot smarter. It really is. And I think, you know, we think about our students that may go into the engineering field and need to do a prototype for some type of new thing that's going to change the way people move forward in this world. And AI can help them get closer to that than it ever has before. They still need to be able to do the work, right, and to be able to help do the iterations over time. But I just think the possibilities are endless if we show our students and our staff really how to use it and how to use it responsibly. There's just so much that can be done.
Well, I think that's a great place to leave it. I think we're going to have to check in at some point in a few months or a year to see how things are going, especially after this hour of AI. So Dawn Shirey, she's the Director of Virtual Learning and Instructional Technology for Baltimore City Public Schools. I thank you like so much for joining me and taking time to talk about the way that Baltimore schools are attacking this moment and give us insight into the things that are happening inside real classrooms and with real kids. I'll place a link to the AI guidance in our show notes, as well as a link for parents in our show notes. I really appreciate you coming and taking some time to talk with me.
Thank you.
Before we go, it looks like self-driving taxis are coming to the streets of Baltimore City. Just as Waymo announced it's bringing its self-driving cars here, someone posted a video on Waymo of a video on the West Coast of a car casually rolling through what happens to be an active police standoff. Lights are flashing, guns are pointed, and the car just keeps on cruising. You can check it out on the Instagram link in the show notes. It's one of those unexpected edge cases that as a software developer and a programmer, no one really thought, hey, how do we deal with self-driving cars when there's a police standoff? All right, that's it. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and that's it for the week. If you got thoughts on today's show, questions or ideas, or thoughts on future episodes, you can click the microphone link inside of the WYPR app or go to www.jasonmperry.com and let me know your thoughts. New episodes drop every other Wednesday, and we've got some great conversations lined up. Thanks to the team at WYPR, our producer, Sam Burmes-Dawes, and Perry Labs Head of Operations and Marketing, Myrna Martinez. I'm Jason Michael Perry. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.